Let's say good morning. Today's daf, take two. Today's daf is Ayin Dalid. We are picking up in Yeretz Hashem Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. So today's daf is 74. We're picking up 73b. Not three lines up. We're picking up actually Tana Rabbanan. Also Tana Rabbanan. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. 13 lines up from the bottom. So says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Ne'emenes chayolomar ze koin v'ze levi ze nosin v'ze mamzer. So we'll say, a midwife, let's say the case over here is you have multiple women giving birth in the same place, and each of those women has a different status. So the Gemara says over here that a midwife is believed to say, this child is a koin, this child is a levi, this child is a nosin, this child is a mamzer. So this goes back. We saw this already. We already began to see this yesterday, that that a midwife is vested with a certain level of credibility to be able to go ahead and discuss the status of different children. So the Gemara says, when is this true? Shelo kara al ha'shem erer. This is only true if what? If there were no objections raised. In other words, that she made a designation. Oh, thank you. Say thank you. There were no contradictions or there were no arguments raised. But at the end of the day, again, if there were objections that were raised, if you look at Rashi, it's Rashi in the first wide line, Lomar ze b'noshal eishes mamzer. So both say, so when is she believed? So she's believed if when she makes the statement, no one's contradicting her. But if others contradicted her, then ultimately her testimony is not believed. So Ir Demais asks the Gemara, what exactly, what kind of objections are we talking about, or who is raising the objections? If you want to say it's one person who's objecting, meaning she says that baby A is a mamzer, and someone else is coming along and saying not true. One person is coming along and saying not true. So Rabbi Yochanan ain iror pachos mishnayim. But Rabbi Yochanan said that I will say a proper objection cannot be less than two people. Ella iror trei. Rather, you have to say that's what, that it's two people ultimately again who are going ahead and raising contradictions. In other words, two people who are going ahead and contradicting the midwife. So the Gemara says, V'bayt, the other possibility is, it could also be that Lemaisa, there is one person who's raising a contradiction. Aye, so why is he believed opposite the midwife? And when Rabbi Yochanan said before that under normal circumstances, objections are only believed if they are raised by two, that's only true of the baby or the child or the person already had a cheskes kashos. But where there is no cheskes kashos, so like in this case, where we do not yet know the status of each of these children, so even again, even the iru or even the objection of one person would hold credibility. Weiter. So now that we've gotten onto the topic of credibility and who is believed to make different claims. So the Gemara says over here the following. Bal Mekach. So let's say somebody sold an object. So the Bal Mekach, the person who sold the object, the seller is believed to say, Macharti lezeh, excuse me, lezeh macharti u lezeh ein macharti. So he's believed to say, I sold the object to this one and not to that. In other words, the case over here is that there's a machlokis between two buyers, who is the actual owner of the object. So the Gemara says that the seller is believed to say, I sold it to Reuven and not to Shimon. So the Gemara says, when is this true? So when is the seller believed? That's when he still has possession of the object. But if the seller does not yet have, if he doesn't have in his hand possessions of the object, so the halacha is eino ne'eman. Then ultimately, again, the seller is no longer believed. So it says the Gemara Taba Vayin Dalet. I don't understand. V'nechsei zuzim iman nakit. Why do we just see who the seller received money from? I don't understand. Why is there machlokis over here? Meaning somebody paid him for the object. So see whose name is on the check. See who you actually paid, and that'll determine the owner of the object. To which the Gemara says, Lo tzricha dinakit mitar vayhu. In reality, he received money from both of them. The seller received money from both of them, and he says, V'amar chad midatoi v'chad bal karchi. One of the monies I accepted willingly, and one was given to me against my will. Or supposed to be given to me against my will. So one of the purchasers actually bought the object, and the other one stuffed money in the seller's pocket and said, oh, the object is mine. V'lo yodia hei midaito v'hei lo midaito. And the case would be ultimately where what? Where we don't know which one actually bought the object and which one forced the money upon the seller. Therefore again, the Gemara says, if the object is still in the hand of the seller is believed to say, I sold to this one and not to that one. Next. Ne'eman dayan lomar lezezachis lezechayavti. Similarly, Rabbi say, let's say two people walk out of Beis Din. I should say, you have two people who have a court case. The dayan, the judge, is believed to say, I found this one innocent and this one guilty. But when is that true? Shebali dina omdim lefanav. That's only true if the litigants are still in court. Aval in bali dina omdim lefanav eino ne'eman. But once the litigants are no longer in court, so the judge is not believed. Rabbi say, now the reason we say the judge is not believed is because the judge has got a lot of cases, you know, that come through his courtroom. Once the litigants leave, we don't necessarily believe that he has clarity as to who was innocent, who was guilty. Asks the Gemara, I don't understand. The next is a chusem anokit. The assumption is there's a verdict, right? There's a verdict that's written. So if there's a verdict that's written, why don't we see who's innocent, who's guilty in the verdict? So lo tzvicha dekaria zechusayhu. The case over here is where what? The case over here is where the verdict was torn up. So why don't we just tell litigants, listen, you got to go back into court, and the case has to be adjudicated again, and therefore we'll see who's innocent, we'll see who's guilty. This is very interesting. Gemara says, "Beshuda the dainer." But remember, we learned this in Shuda the dainer. We saw this in Ksuvas. Shuda the dainer, both say, refers, I guess, what we call to judicial assessment. What this means at the end of the day is the following: what this means is there are two different types of cases that dayanim deal with. So some of them ultimately, again, are just straight din. Right, somebody's chayiv, somebody's potter, something, and it can be out of shulchan aruch. Shuda the dini means case of judicial assessment where the judges make a decision that's not necessarily based on shulchan aruch. It's not a halachic decision, but rather it's an assessment decision. So you can't go ahead and have the Beis Din judge that again. Why? Because also if something is based on just judicial assessment, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get the same result twice. So therefore, to call them back into court and re-go through the process again doesn't necessarily mean that you'll clarify what the original verdict was. Therefore, I will say, therefore, Allah Kalamais, what the Gemara says is, as long as the two litigants are still in the Beis Din itself, the judge is believed to say who is innocent and who is guilty. Amar Rav Nachman, Shlosha Ne'emanin Ala Bechar. There are three people that are believed to testify that a child is a Bechor. In other words, three people who are believed to say that a particular child is a Bechor. Who are the three? Elohim, Chaya, the midwife, Aviv, his father, V'imo, and his mother. And I will say, interestingly enough, all of these people have credibility at different stages. Chaya la'alter. So ultimately, again, the midwife is believed immediately upon the birth of the child. The imo kol shiva, the mother is believed the first 7 days of the child's life. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, kol shiva, sha'adayin ein aviv makir bo. Because they will say, for the first 7 days of the baby's life, often the father doesn't really know him. Shelo yotza mitachas yidei imo likanis libris. Because ultimately, especially when the baby is an infant, the child is often just with the mother. But if after the seventh day, meaning from the bris milah and on, so mutal al aviv lahakiro. So ultimately, from the bris milah and on, we will see it's obligatory upon the father to know his son. So we'll say, so again, the divine others comment that it doesn't mean that the mother's credibility ends at 7 days, but rather it means that only she has the credibility during the first 7 days, the father does not. So the Gemara says, Aviv Liolam, and the father has the credibility for the rest of his life, for the rest of the child's life. Kidisanyo Yakir, because the Pasuk Rabbo say this is by Nachla, this is by inheritance. The Pasuk says, Ki es ben habachar ben hasnua yakir losei slo. This is something I remember about this Pasuk about the man who has two wives, one who he likes, one who he doesn't like. The eldest son comes from the unliked wife, and therefore the Torah says that he still has an obligation to give a double portion to the Bechor, even though that is the son of the wife he does not like. So the Torah uses lashon of yakir. The father must recognize his son who is the Bechor, to which the Gemara says, yakir means the father has to recognize him, and yakirenu la'achirim. He must make the Bechor's son recognized unto others. Mikan am Rabbi Yehuda. From here Rabbi Yehuda said, Ne'eman adam lomar ze bini bechor. A person is obligated to say, or a person is believed to say, excuse me, this is my eldest son. Ukeshem shne'eman lomar ze bini bechor. And just as a father is believed to say, this son is my bechor, kach ne'eman lomar ze ben grusha v'ze ben chalutza. So too a father is believed to say that what? This child of mine, meaning I'm a kohen, this child of mine is the son of a grusha, is the son of a chalutza. The chum say no, not correct, eno ne'eman. Fakham say no, my father is believed to go ahead and say that a particular son is a bechor. He's believed to say that this is my firstborn, but he is not believed to say that this child is a ben grusha ben chalutza. Both said the distinction, of course, being such that Chum says a father is believed ultimately again to go ahead and give his son rights, but a father is not believed to go ahead and compromise his son's lineage. So to say he's the bechor, he's believed. To say that he's a ben grusha ben chalutza, he is not believed. Abba Shol, Hayakar l'shtuki b'duki. So remember again, the Mishnah said that Abba Shol used to call l'shtuki b'duki. So remember, shtuki is the child whose mother is known, father is unknown. So why would Abba Shol call l'shtuki b'duki? My b'duki. What does that mean, the b'duki? We'll say b'duki obviously comes from Lashon of baduk, right? Vetted, investigated, known, or checked out. So if you want to say that what it means is the following, that we go ahead and when we see that the mother is pregnant and there's no man in the picture, we ask her, tell us, you don't have to divulge the identity of the father, but is the father a kosher? Right? Is the father someone who's genealogically fit? And she says yes. So ne'emenes, she is believed. She's believed. So maybe that's why Abba Shaul calls her a Baduki, because again, we check with her just to make sure that the father of her unborn child is in fact someone who's genealogically fit. So the Gemara says, Kiman, whose opinion does this reflect? Rabbi Gamliel. So this would reflect the view of Rabbi Gamliel. But if that's the case of Osai, Tanina Chada Zimna. We already learned Rabbi Gamliel's Shita. We're going to see, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. We're going to see that Rabbi Gamliel's Shita is that if you check with the pregnant woman about the status of the father of the baby, and she says the father is kosher, ultimately she's believed. She's believed. So that's Shita Rabbi Gamliel is going to see in just a moment, but we already learned that once. So the Gemara says, this not, Haisimu Uberes, if a woman was pregnant, this about an unmarried woman. And we asked her, what's the nature of this baby? In other words, what's the status of this baby? Who's the father? So, and she says to them, Amar lahemish ploni v'koinu. And she says, oh, mamish, not only is he kasha, but it's miyuchus. Right? This child has yichus, right? The baby's a coin. So what's the halacha? Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, omrim ne'emenes. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer say that she is believed. That she is believed. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, lo mi piha anu chayin. Rabbi Yeshua says, no. Just because she says it, we don't believe it. In other words, that once a woman is not living with a particular man, who's her husband, and she's just pregnant from someone, just because she says, I'm pregnant from a guy who's a kohen, does not make this child a kohen. Because obviously, if we accept the testimony, it's not just about being, meaning that means he's entitled to truma, that means many different things. Rabbi Yeshua says, we don't live based on her words. In other words, we don't accept her words at face value. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Gamliel. And yet Rabbi Yehuda sending Shmuel that halacha was Rabbi Gamliel. So both sides say, now it appears, so we've already established earlier that if a woman is pregnant and you ask her about the status of the father, and she says that the father of the child, the father of the baby is kosher, then what? We believe her. So why does Abba Shaul seems to be saying the same exact thing in our Mishnah? What did Abba Shaul say? Abba Shaul said that we call the shtuki a beduki. And what does that mean? We ask the mother, who is the father? You don't have to tell us the name, but is he a kasher? Is he not a kasher? So ask Zimmer, I don't understand. Why don't I need Abba Shaul to say the same thing that Rabbi Gamliel already taught us? To which the Gemara says the following. So this is interesting about say. So because one statement, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rabbi Gamliel de lohe emina ela la'atzma shalon es chalala min atshuma. Avalo lahachshir osa uber she'imbasi lo tinasi lakoin. Abba Shaul machshir ba bebita, the Hamas nisen af bivlad koi the hashai shuv shtugi. Let's listen to this. To which the Gemara says, when Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her, Rabbi Gamliel said we believe her legabe her own status. So for example, Rabbi says, listen to the following case. Let's say she's a bas kohen. Let's say she's a bas kohen, and therefore she's entitled to eat truma. Now she's pregnant. So remember again, technically speaking, if she's pregnant from Yisrael, then ultimately she is no longer permitted to eat truma. If it happens to be that the father of the baby is a kohen, even though she's not married to that man, technically she could continue to eat truma. If that's what Rabbi Gamliel says, if she says, I'm pregnant by a kohen, then we'll believe her. But in terms of the status of the child, we do not believe her statement regarding the status of the child. However, Abba Shaul comes along to say, no, not only do we believe her, legabe her own personal status, but what? We believe her regarding the status of the baby as well. So the Gemara says, "Hani chalman do amar ledivrei ha-machshirba post sababita." So that's fine according to the opinion who said that when Rabbi Gamliel said that we believe her, it only meant for her, but not for her daughter, for her child. Chalman do amar ledivrei ha-machshirba machshirba bita abshal ma asla shir. Rabbi says, according to the opinion who said that when Rabbi Gamliel said we believe her, doesn't just mean we believe her for her status, but we believe her status also vis-a-vis her unborn child. So now, what is abshal coming to add? To which the Gemara says, "My asala shmirin dabashol adifa mid Rabbi Gamliel." To which the Gemara says, "No, because Abishol's statement is even better, is stronger than Rabbi Gamliel's." How so? Diime hasam, because we'll say if it would have just cut from the first case. Remember, the first case was a woman is pregnant, and we ask her, "Mativo shel uberze, what's the nature of the baby? Who's the father?" So in Rabbi Gamliel's case, "Hava amina hasam derov ksheirim etzas." So you'll say, "I would have thought." Then what's Rabbi Gamliel's case? Rabbi Gamliel's case is one of where the majority of the men that are around are ksherim. Therefore, in Rabbi Gamliel's case, the reason we believe her is why? Because we don't just have to believe her own word. There's a what? There's a rove. And the rove itself says that the pashtus, again, the father of this baby is someone who is kosher. But again, I will say, if there were a case where the majority of men around her were not kshein bo or psulin, we would not believe her. Therefore, again, Abishol comes along, tricha. Therefore, Abishol comes along and says, no, that even in a case where what? Even in a case where the majority of men around her are psulin, nevertheless, the halacha is that we believe her. That when she says, the kasher nivalti, that the father of my child, ultimately, again, is someone who is kosher, we believe her even when it's rov psulin. Even when ultimately, again, the majority of men around her are pasul. Amar Rava said, halacha ka abishol. And Rava said, in fact, halacha falls abishol. The way that Rav Shulamar Paskins is that, A, when a woman is pregnant and we ask her, is the father of the baby kosher, someone who's genealogically fit? And she says, yes. We believe her, and not only do we believe her for her own status, but what? We believe her ultimately, again, for the status of the baby as well.
So why do we rely on chazaka for a married woman? You should ask a woman who's your husband or not.
According to this shita, according to Abishol, that is correct. You would just have to ask, meaning you don't need chazaka, you just ask her who's the father of the baby, she says, my husband, that's it. Correct. It says, it seems to be a machlokis in halacha. At the end of the day, we pass like Abishol. The only shaila is, I don't know if the psak of Abishol is for the reasons espoused over here, or for different reasons as well. In any event, that's how he passed like Abishol. So we'll say, so that's now we understand, just going full circle. Now we understand also why Abishol called the shtuki the beduki. Because Abishol said like this, when you have a case where a woman is pregnant out of wedlock, so you don't just leave that case alone, but rather you investigate. And the investigation is quite simple. You ask her, are you pregnant by someone who is kosher? And as long as she says yes, then Abishol says, we take her word to establish again the paternity of her status and the status of her baby as well. Says the Mishnah, Kol asur lova bakal, mutar lova zeh bazeh. We'll say, in all the cases of people who are prohibited from marrying into the kahal. So remember, kahal means the general marriage pool of Klal Yisrael. All of those who are prohibited, so for example, a mamzer and others like that, so who are prohibited to marry into the kahal, ultimately are permitted to marry one another. Mutarim lavo zeh bazeh. Permitted to marry one another. So we'll say, if you look at Rashi for a moment, kol asrun lavo bekal mutarim lavo zeh bazeh, kigon mamzeri bishtuki, va'af agav shezeh vadeh v'zeh sofek, So as we'll see in just a little bit, the first opinion of the Mishnah seems to say that everyone who is limited in terms of their marriage pool, everyone who's limited, let me just go back and clarify one thing. Remember, again, the shtuki, the one thing is, even though we pass like Abishol, there will be limitations on the ability of the offspring in the case of the woman who bears a child out of wedlock, to marry into the kahuna. That will still be in effect. Meaning, even though we believe her, there's a limitation with kahuna, because as we saw on yesterday's daf, because of ma'ala asu biyuchsin. In other words, if we don't know definitively who your two parents are, then at the end of the day, there will be a limitation on your ability to marry into the kahuna. But again, as we demonstrated in yesterday's daf, that's not really based on a cogent halachic argument. That's based on a chumrah by genealogy, by yuchs, in order to preserve proper yichus. So the Mishnah is now saying over here the following. Anyone who has limitations as to who they can marry in the general marriage pool of the Jewish people, those individuals are permitted to marry each other. So for example, a mamzer, a nosin, a shtuki, all of those individuals who are limited as to who they can marry in the general marriage pool, halach lemaisa, are permitted to marry one another. Rabbi Yehuda Oser, Rabbi Yehuda says that it's aser. I'm also saying that what exactly Rabbi Yehuda is asking over here, we'll see in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, vadon bevadon mutter. So Rabbi Eliezer holds the following. Vadon bevadon mutter. People who are definitively genealogically flawed are permitted to marry each other. For example, a mamzer and a nosin. Mamzer and Nisin are both definitively genealogically flawed. They are permitted to marry each other. That's case number one. Vadam adam mutar. Vadon bisekon. But for a vadai to marry a safek, or a safek to marry a vadai, or a safek bisekon, aser. So we'll say, so now here's what's interesting. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, for example, a mamzer can't marry a shtuki, or an asufi, right? Or a shtuki, two shtukis can't marry each other. In Rabbi Eliezer's view, the issue is not, let's say you take someone like a shtuki. What's the status of a shtuki, Rabbi Osei? What's the status? So the truth is, we don't really know. It's a safek. So we're going to rule stringently in certain situations, but it's a safek. Is there the possibility that the shtuki is absolutely kosher? Is that a possibility? Yes. So therefore, again, says Rabbi Eliezer, we can't allow a shtuki to marry a mamzer. Why? Because a mamzer is definitively flawed. So to go ahead and allow a mamzer to marry a shtuki who may be definitively kosher is problematic. Therefore, they can't marry each other. Not only that, says Rabbi Eliezer, but what? Two shtukim can't marry each other. Why? Because even though they're both called shtukim, it could be that what? That one is kosher, one is pasul. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, Rabbi Eliezer says the only time that genealogically flawed people can marry each other is when what? When they're both vadais. When they both have definitive statuses. So for example, a mamzer can marry a mamzer can marry an asin, but that's pretty much it. One safek can't marry a vadai, one vadai can't marry a safek, and two safek cases can't marry each other either. So the Gemara says, ve'elu hein asfekos, these are the cases of sfekos, shtuki, asufi, bekusi. So we'll say the Gemara just says, by the way, just in case you want to know, like, what are the sfekos cases? The sfekos cases are the cases of shtuki, asufi, and kusi. Remember again, so shtuki and asufi we spoke about. Shtuki is again, mother is known, father is not known. Asufi, child left in the marketplace. Neither parent is known. Kusi, remember again, were the foreign nation from Kusa that were resettled in Eretz Yisrael. There was an outbreak of lions. They converted, but their conversion was always suspect. It was never clear whether or not they actually converted with complete intentions to be Jewish, says the Gemara.
Who can they marry?
I'm sorry?
Who can they marry?
They're a bit limited. So these, according to Rabbi Eliezer, these Safek cases are stuck. Now, that's true and not true. Meaning, there are other cases we'll see of people. Well, we'll see. We're going to see.
Marrying a ger,
we'll see it. Correct. We're going to see possibilities. Says the Gemara, my kolas, surin lavo bekal. Who are all those who are prohibited from marrying into the kal? Ilema. So I will say, what the Gemara is asking over here is the following. Meaning, let's analyze this first case. The Mishnah brought, the first opinion in the Mishnah was, kalas surin lavo bekal, mutarim lavo zebozeh. Anyone who is not permitted to come into the kal, into the general marriage pool, those individuals are permitted to marry each other. So says the Gemara, who are we talking about over here? Ilemi, ilema, mamzeri, unesini, shtuki, vasufi. If we're talking about a mamzer, a nosin, a shtuki, and a sufi, hatana l'resha mamzeri unesini shtuki va'asufi mutarm lavo zebaza. Then again, we learned already in the previous Mishnah that a mamzer, a nosin, a shtuki, and a sufi are permitted to marry each other. That was the previous Mishnah. V'su Rabbi Huda oser ahiyah. So first of all, we'll say furthermore that statement that Rabbi Huda asers. What is that statement going on? What is that statement referring to? Ilema avadon bisvekon. If you want to say that Rabbi Huda is saying that someone who's a vadai can't marry someone who's a safek, in other words, that somebody who's definitively genealogically flawed can't marry a safek, ha midiktani seifa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Vada'an bevada'an mutar. But yet look at the end of the Mishnah, because the end of the Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer says that a vadai can marry a vadai, so vada'an besvekon, usvekon besvekon, aser. Rabbi Eliezer of the opinion of all say that only a vadai can marry a vadai, but a vadai with a safek or a safek with a safek can't. Mechlad Rabbi Yehuda lo sirli. Rabbi Eliezer, we would infer from that that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this. V'chitima Rabbi Yehuda oser ager b'mamzeres. So maybe you'll say that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to ask for the case of a ger marrying a mamzer. So also remember, this was yesterday's daf. So we established yesterday that a ger can marry a mamzer, right? Because remember, again, we spoke about the idea that what? That kal gerim lo ikri kal. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda is coming along to argue on that point. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, no, a ger cannot marry a mamzer, to which the Gemara says, midi ger b'mamzer es katani. Is that what it says in the Mishnah? Kala osrim lava b'kal katani. That's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah talks about a case. The Mishnah makes a statement of anyone who's ushered to come into the kal, ultimately are permitted to marry each other. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says, Amud Beis, hachi ka'amar. This is what he means to say. Hachi ka'amar. This is the meaning of the Mishnah. Specifically, the meaning of the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Kol asurim lava bekal kahuna. Oh, well, so listen to this. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Hachi kamer. Rashi says kilomar liolim Rabbi Yehuda ger b'mamzeres koy. The shomalei l'tanakam is a ayriba. The high bekahal de kaamrit kahal kahuna hu the koin aser begiores. We'll see this in just a moment. So says the Gemara the following. The Gemara suggests the following. The Mishnah says kol asurim lava bekal. What we're talking about over here is the following. Which kahal? Not the kahal of Klal Yisrael, but rather what? The kahal kahuna. Whoever is usher to enter into the kahal of kahuna is mutarim lavo ze boze. Now what are we specifically referring to, or who are we specifically referring to, that can't enter into the kahal of the kahuna? Mainihu, giores pechusa mibas shalosh shanim v'yomechad. We're specifically referring to a girl who converted below the age of 3 years old in one day. So also remember again, what's significant about the age of 3 years old and one day? That remember again, Bia is not considered to be significant less than 3 years old and one day. In other words, that if Bia occurs with a girl less than 3 years old in one day, the girl is still considered to be a basula. Now this is very important, because the assumption, if you look at, now go back to Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, in the Rashi Yalki Kamer, three lines in, Rashi says the kohen aser b'giyores afilu pechus mibaskim ulshanim. A kohen is prohibited to marry giyores even if she's less than 3 years old. The lav bas piyahi, even though again there's no halachic bia that occurs. The ain sham chashash mishum znus. Both say the concern sometimes is that when a woman converts, ultimately again she may have the status of zona in terms of having bia with someone with whom kiddushin would not have been effective. So the Gemara is coming to come. The Gemara Mishnah is coming along to say that a kohen may not marry a gioris even if she converted less than 3 years old. At the age of less than 3 years old, and not like Reb Shimon Yochai. We'll say, what does Reb Shimon Yochai say? So Rashi points out again. We'll see over here. Amar la kamam beperkin gioris bechusam ibas gimel ksheira lakuna. We'll say, listen to this. We'll see that this is a fundamental machlokas. Rashi, Reb Shimon Yochai says that if a girl converted at less than the age of 3 years old in one day, that she is permitted to marry a kohen, because the assumption is that she is a besula. She's not a zona. Rashi says, let's finish the Rashi. Look, Reb Shimon, Amar la kamam beperkin gioris bechusam ibas gimel ksheira lakuna vachi kamar. What the Mishnah means to say. Kol asurin lava b'kal kahuna. So the way they read the Mishnah is the following. Anyone who is prohibited from entering into the kahal of kahuna, umaynihu, who are we talking about over here? Demar b'hai klal yesra al rishonim shasurim b'kal yisrael, ki yoris b'chusam ibas shaloshonim, v'choshekein yisira ibas shaloshonim, mutarin, anach asurin, giyoris mamzeru mastu, v'nesini shtuki lava zebazeh. So as I listen to this, therefore, the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the novelty of the Mishnah is the following. Kol asurin lovo bekal. Anyone who is prohibited to marry into the kahuna. Who are we specifically referring to? A giyores less than the age of 3 is permitted to go ahead and marry all of the other people who are psulin as well. So a giyores less than the age of 3 can't marry a kohen, but she can go ahead and marry all the other psule kahal. So the Gemara says, and obviously, This is not like the opinion of Rav Shammai Achai, because Rav Shammai Achai holds that if a girl converts less than the age of 3, she's considered to be a besula, therefore no zona designation, therefore she could marry into a zona. So the Gemara says, "V'nukma b'bas shalosh shana b'yomechad b'afli Rav Shammai Achai." So why don't we just set up the Mishnah as dealing with the case of a girl who converted above the age of 3 years old in one day, and then what? Make the Mishnah the divra call according to everyone, even according to Rashbi. Imkain mitzida tavra. Because we'll say if you do that, ultimately again, you'll refute the Mishnah from within. Mitzida tavra means that you will go ahead and create a problem on the very answer itself. Let's analyze this. Ela taimu debash shalosh shana b'yomechad. So the reason why this girl can't marry, let's analyze this. The reason this girl can't marry into the kuhuna is that what? Is that she's 3 years old in one day. Well, we would infer from that, Moses, if you were to set up the Mishnah as dealing with the case of a girl who's more than 3 years old in one day, I would assume that's the case where she can't marry into the kuhuna. And remember again, Moses, there seems to be a relationship. If you can't marry into the kuhuna, you can marry into the kal of psulim. Right, that's the inverse relationship. If you're pasul to the kuhuna, you're mutter to the other psulim. Say if you start the Mishnah dealing with the case of a girl who's more older than 3 years old in one day, so she's asura to the kuhuna, and therefore she's muteres to come into the. Therefore, she's muteres. I'm sorry. Let's read that again. At the time of the bashalos shana biyomechad, hapechusim. The reason that she can't marry into the kuhuna is because she's older than 3 years old in one day. Hapechusim ibashalos shana biyomechad. If she was younger than 3 years old in one day, dimuteres lavo bakal kuhuna, she would be permitted to marry into the kuhuna. Therefore, aser lavo zeboze. She would be prohibited to marry any of the other psulim. Hapechusim ibashalos shana biyomechad. The Rav Shimon ben Yochai dimuteres lavo bakal kuhuna. Umutaros lavo zeboze. Rabbi said, "According to Rav Shimon Yochai, if she was less than 3 years old in one day, she'd be permitted to go to marry into the kal kuhuna, and she'd also be permitted to go ahead and marry the psulim." Obviously, that doesn't make sense. Uklaluhu, is that true? Now, Rabbi said, the Gemara is backed into saying this because we're making the assumption that there is a principle. Is it true the chol ha'asurim lavo bekal kuhuna? Mutarim lavo zebaze. Both say, is it true? Is that inverse relationship true? That if you can't marry into the kahuna, that you are permitted to marry any of the psulim? Is that really true? What about the following case? Bari amana ugrusha bachalala bezona. Both say, you have cases of a woman who's a divorcee, or actually a widow, a divorcee, a chalala. Remember, a chalala is a woman born to a forbidden Kohanic union. We will say zona. What's a zona? So remember, zona in this halachic context just means any woman who had bia with someone with whom she cannot marry ultimately gives her a zona designation legabe a kohen. So we're going to take all of these women. Das sura lava bakal kuhuna. These women are not permitted to marry into the kuhuna. And yet what? Vasurim lavo zebo zeb. Rabbi Yosef, not the halacha is what? An amona agrusha is not permitted to marry a mamzer. So what do you see from here? You see from here that just because someone is precluded from marrying into the kahuna does not automatically mean that therefore you can marry into the kal of psul. In other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is you're creating this relationship that is not true. Either you're in the kahuna or you're in the kal psulim. It's not true. There's a whole group of people that can't marry into the kahuna, but they're still absolutely genealogically kosher, and they can't marry into the kal psulim. Misu, furthermore, ha mutter aser. Is this true that if you're permitted to marry into the kahuna, that you're usher to marry a mamzer? So we'll say, listen to this. Now, we're asking now in the reverse. Meaning what we just established before is that just because you are usher to marry into the kahuna doesn't mean that you are mutter to marry into the kal psulim. Furthermore, the Gemara says, v'su ha-mutter usher. It's also not true that just because you're permitted to marry into the kahuna doesn't automatically mean that what? That you can't marry in to the kal psulim. After all, v'hari ger shemutar b'kohenes, this is an interesting way to phrase it. You know, a ger could also marry into the kahuna. Just a different way. We established this yesterday. How could a ger marry into the kahuna? A ger, a male convert, could marry a kohenes. We established this yesterday. There's no problem with that. So here you have an example of a quote-unquote psul, right? Although Ger really isn't in the category of psulim as the rest of them, but he's grouped there because there are certain exclusions of the, who he could marry under certain circumstances. So you have a Ger who can marry into the kahuna, yet what? Umutri ba mamzeres. Rabbi said, we also paskin that a Ger can marry a mamzer. So what do you see from here? You see a case now of someone who is permitted to marry into the kahuna, and what? Is also permitted to marry a psul. So we'll say, all the Gemara is saying over here is, you're creating all of these frameworks, all of these rules, but the rules may not be correct. Ela amar abnasan baro shiachi kamar. This is what it means to say, kol shekoin asra lisa es bito. Ah, let's say, what's the case? Any case of where a Kohen cannot marry a particular person's daughter, this would be a case of where what? Of where this particular person could not marry into the kahuna and therefore could marry into the kahal of psulim. So we'll say, so what's this case? O my nihu, ger shenasa giyores, ukarabi Eliezer b'Yakov. So we'll say, we will actually see this case later on. This is a fascinating case. I mean, later on, not today, but later on in a few days. About, we'll say, what's the status of the offspring of gerim? Two people convert, they have a child. What is the status? Obviously, the child is Jewish. The shaila is, does that child have the status of a convert or not? So, what I say, the Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov suggests that what? That a Kohen, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov paskins that the offspring of two convert parents has the status of being a ger as well, and therefore a Kohen would not be permitted to go ahead and marry such an individual. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, if therefore again, they would be permitted. So this child, the offspring of this union of two convert parents, would not be permitted to go ahead and marry a Kohen, but would be permitted to marry into the Kal of Psulim. So says the Gemara, is that true? Klolahu, the Kol Shekoin Asoli says Bito, Mutarim Lavo Zebazeh. Is that true, Bosai? That any case where a Kohen would not be permitted to marry the daughter of a particular union, that daughter can marry into the Kal Psulim. What about the following case? Hare Chalo Shenosa Bas Yisrael. So we'll say, what about the following case? A Chalo marries a Bas Yisrael, right? Remember again, someone who is from a prohibited Kohanic union, who marries a Bas Yisrael. The Kohen Asra Lisa Bito. So the Kohen is not permitted to go ahead and marry the daughter of that union. Vasurin Anami Lavo Zeba Zebrabose, but yet the daughter of that union of a Chalal and a Bas Yisrael can't marry into the Psulin. So you see that the rule doesn't hold true. That just because the Kohen can't marry the daughter of a particular union doesn't give the right of that daughter to marry into the Kal Psulin. Lo Kasha, Kirabi Dostoy Ben Yehuda. It reflects Rabbi Dostoy. Bose, where's Rabbi Dostoy? Say, look at Rashi. Rashi is about 7 lines up from before it gets wide. Kirabi Dostoy Rabbi Yehuda. Rashi Sfirli Latana Didan. So as before, Rabbi Dostoy is of the opinion that Benos Yisrael, Jewish girls, are like a mikvah tara, are like a mikvah for chalalim, which is another way of saying Rabbi Dostoy says, chalalus is not passed on. Chalalus is not passed on. In other words, again, if a chalal marries a Bas Yisrael, the offspring of that, of the union, is totally fine. So fine. So we'll say, so now that makes sense. If the offspring is totally fine, then what? Then in fact, a Kohen potentially could marry that offspring, in which case a child could not marry into the compromised cow pool. To which the
coin?
I'm sorry?
Is that a coin?
No, because remember, the father is a chalal. So remember, so in that case over there, the father is a chalal who married a regular woman. So the whole idea is the chalalus is not passed on, but the child cannot become a kohen. So the Gemara says, "Vahari chalal shenasa chalala." What about the following case of a chalal who marries a chalala? The kohen asra li sabito, va'asra nami lavo zebazeh. I will say, but again, remember, all we're doing now is we're challenging the rule, because the rule makes it sound like, again, any union that produces a daughter, if a Kohen cannot marry that daughter is permitted to marry into the Kal of Psulim. To which the Gemara says,
it's really false, though. I mean, if she's kosher, how can she marry a man? Why does it matter whether she can't marry a... She's a daughter of
Gerim,
and you hold
it. Correct. That's the Gemara's asking. You're right. You're saying, meaning, once we say it, it's an obvious question. So that's the Gemara's doing. The Gemara's saying, I don't even understand why the principle gets started. After all, look at this case. Chalal marries a chalal. So we'll say again, they have an offspring. The Kohen is not usher to marry that daughter. But yet, the usher nami loves Zebuzah. So we'll say again, the Gemara is also asking the same basic question. You're trying to create this as an either or. Either you're kosher to the kahuna, or you're kosher to the kal psulim. And all the Gemara is just saying is, it's not true. There's a whole other, another category of where what? Of people who can't marry into the kuna, it's true, but they're absolutely genealogically fit, and therefore cannot marry into the kal psulim. So the chaloh, chalala have a child, okay? Everybody will agree, that child can't marry into the kuna, but that child can't marry a mamzer either. To which the Gemara says, v'su, ham, mutr, aser. Further, Rabbah says, is that true? That wherever a child, wherever let's say a particular person, is permitted to marry into the kuna, is it true that they're automatically usher to marry into the kal of the psulim? After all, Bahari ger shenas abas Yisrael. So we'll say, yeah, what about the following case? A ger marries a Jewish woman, a regular Jewish woman, the kohen mutar li sabito. So we'll say, so at least according to many, the kohen is permitted to marry the offspring of that union. And yet, mutarin lavo zebazeh. We'll say, yet, we'll see, again, we're going to explore this case in greater detail. So we'll say, this is a case of where the father is a convert, mother is the Yisraelis. They have a child. This opinion that's being expressed over here is that a kohen is permitted to marry the offspring of that union, yet that girl could still potentially go ahead and marry a mamzer as well, since in certain ways she has the designation of a giyores. So you see over here that there are cases where a person can marry into the kuna and yet what? Still be permitted to marry into the kal psulim. Now that case is going to require a lot more investigation, as we'll see. Well, see, now we're finally drilling down to it. The truth is, the real fundamental machlokes of Bosai is not all mamzerim are created equal. There are different cases of mamzerus of Bosai. So, for example, the Gemara creates two paradigmatic cases of mamzerus. There's a mamzer me'achoso, a mamzer created from incest, versus a mamzer created from adultery. Now, Bosai, you'll say to yourself, a mamzer is a mamzer is a mamzer. No. What's the difference, Rabbi Osei? The halacha is, if a person engages chas v'shalom in an act of incest, that is punishable by kares. A person engages in an act of adultery, that is punishable by misas bezdin. As the Gemara is going to now suggest, Rabbi Osei, is that there may be a qualitative difference in the mamzerim produced from those different unions. Watch this. Tanakama savra afilu mamzer me'achoso nami havi mamzer. So Tanakama holds that a mamzer that comes from an incestuous union is still considered to be a mamzer for these purposes. Well, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says, well, actually, let's just finish. Tanakama savra mamzer me'achoso nami havi mamzer. Rabbi Yehuda savar me'eshes ish havi mamzer me'achoso lo havi mamzer. So on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda holds that noble side. The only time that a mamzer has a real mamzer designation, and we're talking about, again, for marriage purposes as well, is only a mamzer that comes from a union that is punishable by misas bezdin. But if the mamzer comes from a union that is quote-unquote only punishable by kares, that does not produce the genealogical mamzer that we're discussing over here. So we'll see what the status is. My kamash malon. So what's the chiddush over here? Tanina, ezu mamzer, who is a mamzer? Well, that's actually what we'll do. We're going to stop over here for today. So we'll say we're going to stop right at this inyan. So understand where we're leaving off. What the Gemara now is suggesting is fine. Let's just review what we've established. What we've established is that halacha lemaisa, the principles that the Gemara originally wanted to espouse, don't seem to work. In other words, what we'll call the either-or model. Either you're kasher l'kahuna, or you're kasher for the kahal psulim. We've already established that does not work. So therefore, what the Gemara wants to suggest is that the fundamental machlokis at play over here is a fundamental machlokis as to which type of mamzer is actually subject to the prohibitions that we've been discussing. And we're going to see now, and this is amazing because we've never seen anything like this before, because we've always assumed that a mamzer is a mamzer is a mamzer. In other words, any child produced from a union that is punishable by death, whether that's a death of kares or a death of misas bezdin, is going to be a mamzer. Now we're going to see that is going to be subject to dispute, and we're going to see, again, based on that dispute, we're going to learn how to interpret the Mishnah properly. All right, we'll stop over here. Yes.